Okay, we're going to be in here on the top of Tzadivav Amud Aleph. The Gemara here is discussing the machloke between Rabbi Gamliel and the Tana Kama and our Mishnah as to how many tefillin one can take in when they find them in the field. The Tana Kama says you can take them in one at a time. Rabbi Gamliel says you can take in two at a time. Question is, why? What's the difference or what is motivating them to say this? One of the issues which we discussed yesterday is Rav Shmuel Bar Rav Yitzchak, who tells us that a person can wear two pairs of tefillin, that they can fit two pairs of tefillin on their head, on their arms. Whether they're doing this mitzad mitzvah, or whether they're doing this mitzad tachshit, we know that there is room for two pairs of tefillin, and that is probably what's motivating Rabban Gamliel to say that you can bring them in two at a time. But still, the question is, what would determine why one and two? So the Gemara is going through different permutations. The first permutation the Gemara uses is machloket as to whether Shabbat is zman tefillin or Shabbat is not zman tefillin. Then the Gemara moved on and said maybe everybody believes that Shabbat is zman tefillin, but it's a question of whether mitzvot tzrichot kavana. And then after that, the Gemara moved on and said, all right, let's assume that everybody believes that you don't need kavana. Mitzvot enam tzrichim kavana. Question is the gabei bal tosif. Violating bal tosif, do you have to have kavana? Or do you not have to have kavana when you're in violation of bal tosif? Even if you don't need kavana for mitzvot, maybe you need kavana for bal tosif. So then we're up to, on daf tzadivav amin aleph, another iteration of this machloket between them. Let's start from the top there. In order to be yotze the mitzvah, you do not need kavanah. They're arguing about whether you need kavanah to be in violation of baltosif. The Tanakam is over mishum baltosif lo bayi kavanah. You don't need intent. Therefore, if you just put on two pairs of tefillin, you can be in violation of baltosif right away. You need intent. And because of that, you can put on two pairs of tefillin as long as you're not intending to be Mosif, do an extra mitzvah, then it won't be problematic. Some say no, that everybody believes that Shabbat is zman tefillin. And everybody agrees, to be in violation of bal tosif, you don't need kavanah, and to be yotze the mitzvah, you don't need kavanah. And they're machloket, v'hocha, v'la'avor shalo bizmano kamiflegei. Here is the question, when it's not the proper time to be in violation about to see what you need to do. Tanakama sever lo bayi kavana. Even if you're outside of the normal framework of doing the mitzvah, it doesn't require kavana in order to be in violation about to see. Whereas Rav Gamliel sever la vor shlo bizmano, when you're violating about to see outside of the framework of the normal mitzvah, bayi kavana. You need kavana, you need intent. It says, Yochi, the Rabbi Meir Zuke Chad Namilo. Why can you wear one pair? Exactly your question. If I blow the shofar out of context, I could still be in violation of Al-Tosif. If I wear tefillin out of context, here we're saying Shabbat is Lav Zman tefillin. As soon as I put on a pair of tefillin, why can I even put on one pair of tefillin? Forget about two pairs of tefillin. I'm in violation of Al-Tosif. And the Gemara brings very particular example, which has ramifications in terms of aloha ba'od, ishan bis shmini b'suka ilake. Someone who sleeps on the eighth day in the sukkah should get malkot. So here Rashi points out that in chutz la'aretz, where you have shmini atzeret, and shmini atzeret is really safek shvi'i, safek shmini, to safek whether it's the seventh day of sukkot or the eighth day of sukkot, the Gemara prescribes for us exactly what you're supposed to do. The Gemara in Sukkah is explicit as what to do. It says, Motzvei Yadvinan, we do sit in the Sukkah on the eighth day, Bruchei lo mevarchinan, but we do not make a bracha. It's explicit what you do on the eighth day. Rashi says, the problem is, how could the Gemara give such a piece of advice? Because if you're in violation of Baal Tosif, even without Kavanah, then how do you sit in the Sukkah on the eighth day? When we sit in the Sukkah on the eighth day, we do it al Tanai. We understand that if it's Sukkot, if it's Shvi'i, then we're Yotze from sitting in the Sukkah. But if it's Shmini, then we're not trying to mikayim the mitzvah of Sukkah. We're simply sitting in a Sukkah. Nothing to do with the mitzvah of Sukkah. In Chutz La'aretz, it's very clear what you have to do. The Gemara says, you sit in the Sukkah, you don't make a bracha. And despite that fact, minhagim developed, despite the fact that the Gemara is explicit about what you do. There are many minhagim about Shmini Atzeret and Chutz La'aretz, which developed much later on, and not out of Dina de Gemara. And Rashi is explicit here about what the Dina de Gemara is and how they practice. Here the Gemara says that practice will run you into a problem, which is that if you end up in the Sukkah on the eighth day, without any Kavanah, you're going to be in violation of Baal Tosif. You're out of the framework of the mitzvah, you're sitting in the Sukkah, and now you have a problem about Tosif. So Gemara says, if that's the case, clear that this answer is not going to work. Because otherwise, as David asked before, any mitzvah out of context, automatically you're going to be in violation about tosif. It's too broad a net, it's too easy to be in violation about tosif, and it doesn't make so much sense. So then we say, let's go back to the previous answers. Now the Gemara stops here, the Gemara does not continue with this line of thinking. Rashi claims, when the Gemara says, Rashi says, "B'Shabbat Zman, V'Lav Zman Tefillin Hu." We're going back to the decision as to whether Shabbat is Zman Tefillin or not Zman Tefillin. Now, how does Rashi know that? It's somewhat questionable. The Gemara here had numerous iterations as to the possibility of what their machloket is about. It started out with the machloket revolving around Rav Shmuel, Rav Yitzchak, and the Gemara rejected that outright. But then it moved on to Shabbat Zman Tefillin, Shabbat Lav Zman Tefillin. Then the Gemara says, well, everybody agrees that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin, but they argue about Mitzvot Tzrichot Kavana. Or everybody agrees Mitzvot Einan Tzrichot Kavana, but we're dealing with whether Baal Tosif Tzrichot Kavana or not. There are all these iterations along the way. Why is Rashi so sure that the Gemara says, Ela Kavarta Kameikara? It's clear that we're going back to the original statement. He means the very first statement, which is a machloka, whether it's Shabbat or not, Shabbat Zman Tefillin. So there are those who want to suggest the reason is because the interim steps involved the Gemara suggesting that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin. And the Gemara now is going to attempt to find an author for that position, is going to have a lot of difficulty finding a Tana that really supports that position or is the author of such a position that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin Hu. And since that is lo ke halacha, that Shabbat Zman Tefillin is not the way we pass on halacha, that's what drove Rashi to go back further and say that their machloket revolves around whether Shabbat Zman Tefillin or lo Zman Tefillin. Because the other two assume that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin. Since they assume that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin, it doesn't make sense to say that's what the Gemara is going back to. And that's why Rashi went all the way back. When he rolled it back, he rolled it all the way back to the beginning, because at least there we can get a position that is lo halacha. So now the Gemara asks, Man Shmaitle Shabbat Zman Tefillin. Where do we find anybody who says that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin? The assumption being that Shabbat is not Zman Tefillin. And we'll see why. So Gemara first attempts to say that it's Rabbi Akiva, the Tanya. Shamarta et ha-chuka azot le-molada mi-yamim yamima. You should remember, you should practice this chok, whatever the definition of the word chok is here, le-molada in its time, mi-yamim yamima, on a continuous basis. Yamim yamima can be daily or can mean yearly. Whatever the definition of the chok is will determine what yamim yamima means over here. The drosha is yamim velo leilot, days, and not nights. Mi yamim velo kol yamim, some days and not all days. Prat l'shabbatot v'yamim tovim. That comes to exclude Shabbat and Yom Tov. Divrei Rabbi Yossi Aglili. So Rabbi Yossi Aglili says there are three things that are precluded from mitzvat tefillin, the way that he's learning the pasuk. He says the pasuk chok refers to tefillin, putting on tefillin. He says you only put on tefillin during the day, not at night. You only put on tefillin some days of the year, not all days of the year. You put them on weekdays, don't put them on Shabbat and Yom Tov. That's the position of Rabbi Yossi Aglili. Now, the pasuk is found at the end of Parshat Bo in one of the parshiot tefillin of Kadesh Li. So in that parsha, which is one of the parshiot of tefillin, that's where this pasuk is found. And he thinks that the pasuk here is referencing tefillin. Rabbi Akiva Omer, lo nemar chukazu elolinyan pesach bilvad. The context in which it's written is about whether it's korban pesach, it's yat mitzrayim. Tefillin happened to be mentioned in the parsha as well, but it's not clear that the chok here references tefillin. Rabbi Akiva says, no, the chok that's being referenced here is pesach. And then the meaning of the word here would be that the chukah is Pesach, yamim yamim would be yearly. You should practice the korban Pesach. V'had etznan. So then what are you going to do with this Mishnah from Kretot? Pesach v'amila mitzvat asei. Pesach and mila are only positive commandments. There, the Mishnah enumerates Kretot, the negative, the 36 Kretot, where one would get malkot from them and is chayav karet, and they are listed. Then at the end of the Mishnah, it lists two items that have a chiyuv karet associated with them, but they are positive commandments. Those are Pesach and Milah. Now, if Rabbi Akiva is right, that this pasuk is referencing Pesach, lema deloka Rabbi Akiva, that Mishnah is not like Rabbi Akiva. Di Rabbi Akiva came into Mukila b'Pesach. If Rabbi Akiva establishes that this pasuk is referencing Pesach, lav nami ika, then you also have a negative commandment associated with Korban HaPesach. Ked Rabbi Avin Amar Rabbi Elai. Damar Avin Amar Rabbi Elai. Rabbi Elai tell us, Kol Makom Shenemar. In the Torah, there are certain terms that are indicative of a negative commandment. Hishamer, pen, va'al. All three of those words are words that are used to indicate that you have a negative commandment here. So now, if you have those, enu elo b'lo taseh. If you have one of those words, you have a lo taseh. If the case here, the pasuk is, v'shamarta et chukazot l'moadai miyamim yamima. So it says with the word shamarta. So shamarta should indicate a negative commandment, and now we have a negative commandment associated with Pesach, which is Rabbi Akiva's position. And how come the Mishnah says it's only a positive commandment? Must be that that Mishnah and Rabbi Akiva cannot be reconciled. Where it says, afilu tamer Rabbi Akiva. Even Rabbi Akiva could be the author of this position. Hishamer delav, lav. Hishamer dasei, asei. You have to look at the context in which it's written. Hishamer, the word itself, is not inherently mean that you have a negative commandment. Hishamer has to do with the context in which it's written. If it's written in a context where there's a positive commandment, the shamar means keep the positive commandment. It's a reinforcement of the positive commandment. If it's written in the context where it's warning you from not doing something, then the shamar or the shamar will be a negative commandment. So over here, where it's found in the presence or it's talking about a positive commandment, the shamar means be careful to do the positive commandment, not a negative commandment. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva can reconcile with the Mishnah and Kretot. Now the Gemara says, "V'sava Rabbi Akiva Shabbat Zman Tefillinu." Does Rabbi Akiva really believe that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin? V'atanya, we have a bright Rabbi Akiva Omer, "Yachol Yaniach Adam Tefillin B'Shabbatot V'Yomim Tovim." You would think that a person should put on Tefillin on Shabbat and Yom Tov for a good reason. He uses the pasuk here to teach you about Korban HaPesach. If that's the case, he doesn't have the miut from the pasuk to teach you no Shabbat, no Yom Tov. So you would have thought, put on Tefillin on Shabbat, put on Tefillin on Yom Tov. Tamar Lomar, "Vayalachal Ot Al Yadcha." That it should be an oath, a sign on your arm. Mi shitzrichim oath. You only put on tefillin on days that require an oath, that require a sign. Etzu elu shehen gufan oath. Excluded from this are days that are considered to be an oath. That is Shabbat ve Yom Tov. It's very interesting, only because the word oath is only used in reference to Shabbat, not in reference to Yom Tov. Yet, Gemara here assumes that Shabbat and Yom Tov both have a din of oat. As Rashi says, Yamim Shisrael Tzrichim Lamidet Oat Alatzman Lakir Shehem Machzikim B'Torah Toshel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in order to make it obvious or clear that they are upholding Hashem's Torah, whether that means put on tefillin to indicate that we are the servants of Hashem and that we are going to uphold the Torah. Shatzu Shabbatot V'Yamim Tovim Shehem Atzman Oat Ben HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'Yisrael, because they themselves are a sign between Hashem and Yisrael. Dichtiv. And he quotes a pasuk, Yoti ben yuvenechem, which is a reference to Shabbat and not to Yom Tov. Here you see that Shabbat and Yom Tov have a certain similarity or commonness between them, that the Gemara is willing to say that Shabbat and Yom Tov are an oath, even though it's only written by Shabbat. I heard Rav Rosenzweig many times that he views Shabbat as being the paradigmatic Yom Tov. Yom Tov is always viewed in the prism or in reference to Shabbat. Whenever you talk about Yom Tov, we say, oh, Melechet Ochel Nefesh is Mutar. Well, why do you say Melechet Ochel Nefesh is Mutar? Because on Shabbat, it is Asur. So we reference Yom Tov, we look at Yom Tov in reference to Shabbat, and we say, well, these Melechot are Asurot, like Shabbat, and these are Mutarot, not like Shabbat. Shabbat is that paradigm for Yom Tov, or for the quintessential day of Isur Melecha. And that's why Yom Tov will be viewed in that prism of Shabbat. And it's also considered to be an oath. If Shabbat's an oath, then so are the Yomim Tovim. And that's why we say in Kiddush, Tchila l'mikra yekodesh. It's the beginning, the first of Mikra yekodesh. That's both literally, in Parshat Emor, Shabbat is listed as the first of the Mikra yekodesh. But also, in this understanding, it is the paradigm for all of those Mikra yekodesh, which includes Yom Tov. And that's why here, the word oath, even though it's only said by Shabbat, has application both to Shabbat and Yom Tov. The fact that we keep Shabbat and the fact that we keep Yom Tov is an oath that we are upholding the Torah of Hashem. You don't need more than that. You don't need tefillin to indicate that, because we're already doing something by desisting from halacha. We're already indicating that we are the servants of Hashem. What's clear from here is that Rabbi Akiva does not think that you put on tefillin on Shabbat and Yom Tov, and he cannot be the author of this position that we are searching for. What's interesting here is Tosafot notes that even according to the one who says that Miyamim Yamima is referencing Tefillin, and we exclude Shabbat and Yom Tov from that, he still has to rely on this pasuk of Rabbi Akiva. How does he know to exclude Shabbat and Yom Tov? How do you know that Miyamim means some Yamim, not other Mim? How do you know what it means? How do you know which days yes, which days no? So he says that they're still relying on this pasuk of Rabbi Akiva, Vayul Ot Al Yadcha, that the word Ot is indicating to them which should be excluded from that pasuk. But then he asks, what about Chol HaMoed? What's the din Gabe Chol HaMoed? Here the Gemara addresses Shabbat and Yom Tov and calls them an Ot. What's the din Gabe Chol HaMoed? So he says here, L'chora, Ein Laniach Tefillin B'Chol HaShomoed. That you should not put on Tefillin B'Chol HaShomoed, She'ein Tzarich Ot. You don't need an oath. Isur malacha b'davar she'enu aved. There is an isur malacha in Chol HaMoed. It's more limited, but there is an isur malacha, which is davar she'enu aved. Davar she'enu aved. Things that are not going to be lost. Stuff that is not pressing and must be done immediately. Those malachot are asurot on Chol HaShomoed. So we have some manifestation of isur malacha on Chol HaShomoed, and therefore you shouldn't put on tefillin. He then says, you have mitzvah of sukkah, you have the mitzvah of matzah, isur chametz, all these things apply even on Chol HaMoed, and therefore you have plenty of simanim that this is a special day. And that's where the Achot Gedol paskens. But he says in Yerushalmi, it sounds like you put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed, because of a number of halachot that are mentioned over there. And he says, v'chein ama davar. And that seems to be the minhag ha'am, is that people do put on tefillin on Chol HaMoed. The other thing that he mentions over here is the regards to removal of tefillin. So the Rabbeinu Tam says over here that afilu bnei marava, even those people in Eretz Yisrael, davu mevarchim kshayu chotzim tefillin, they make a bracha when they take off tefillin. In Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara discusses that they had a bracha when they removed the tefillin of mishmor chukav. It comes from our pasuk over here, shemarta chukav zot lemoada miyamim yamima. So when they used to remove their tefillin, they made the bracha of mishmor chukav. Hainu, dafka kushecholet samuch lehachshecha. That's only when you take off your tefillin right by nightfall. Meaning that it's only because you're compelled to remove the tefillin do you make the bracha. If you put on tefillin and take them off voluntarily, then you don't make the bracha. The bracha is an indication of the removal of the tefillin because you are compelled to take them off because of the pasuk, which says that laila is lav zman tefillin hi. And since laila is lav zman tefillin hi, that compels you to take off the tefillin. And being compelled to take off the tefillin, then you make the bracha of the Shmur Chukav, which also in of itself is questionable. Why? So there are suggestions that are made, and one has to do with the fact that the removal of tefillin at night is part of the mitzvah of tefillin. Versus when you take off tefillin during the day, you voluntarily take them off. You take them off because we're uncertain as to how to handle them, whether we can keep in mind or have the right mindset. At nighttime, the removal of tefillin, and why Laila loves man tefillini, is because you can't properly take care of your tefillin at night, when you fall asleep. When you are dozing off, you might flatulate, which is a sore, when one is wearing tefillin, or one will have the improper thoughts, reasons that it's not proper maybe to wear tefillin at night, and because of that, you're compelled to take off the tefillin in order to guard the kedushat tefillin. It's part of kedushat tefillin, and therefore you can make a bracha on it. You're making a bracha because you're doing something active to protect the kedushat tefillin. But Rabbeinu Tam says that's only true if you're taking them off right at nighttime, not when you take them off during the day. In addition to that, Tosafot says, in the end, we paskin like Rabbi Akiva, that Laila is man tefillin. And that's the halacha. The halacha is brought down that Laila is man tefillin. And therefore, we're not compelled to take off our tefillin at night because Laila is man tefillin. Einim morin kein, we don't publicly announce this, we don't tell people to put on tefillin at night. If one is wearing tefillin already, we do not compel them to take them off, but we do not encourage or allow people to put tefillin on at night. But that's because of fears that we have of people falling asleep in them, so on and so forth. But mi'ikar adin, Laila is man tefillin, and that's why that bracha no longer applies to us anymore. So now the Gemara says, okay, it can't be Rabbi Akiva. Ela hai tanahu. It must be this Tana who's the author of the position, the Tanya. Ne'ur balayla, person who's up at night. Ratzacholetz, ratzameniach. If he wants to take off his tefillin, he can take him off. If he wants to put him on, he can put him on. Divrei Rabbi Natan. That's the position of Rabbi Natan. Yonatan ha-kaitoni omer, emenichim tefillin balayla. You can't put on tefillin at night. Midalaylo latanakanama zman tefillin. Shabbat nami zman tefillin. The Gemara makes here a quantum leap and says that if a night is zman tefillin for the Tana Kama, then obviously Shabbat is also zman tefillin. Why? Because we learned them both out from the same pasuk, which is from the word chukah in the pasuk. If you learn the word chukah as tefillin, then you have a miut for Laila and you have a miut for Shabbat. On the other hand, if you don't learn chukah as being for tefillin, where's your miut for Laila? Well, if you don't have a miut for Laila, you also don't have a miut for Shabbat v'yom tov. And that's why the Gemara makes this jump. If he thinks that Laila is man tefillin, then he must think that Shabbat and Yom Tov is man tefillin. Very good. So what about Rabbi Akiva? We just had Rabbi Akiva's svar where Rabbi Akiva thinks that Laila is man tefillin. And he has another pasuk, Vayu lo'oto yadcha, that excludes Shabbat and Yom Tov. This is not a good conclusion because of that. The Gemara says, Dilma Svirle, Lila's man tefillin who? Shabbat loves man tefillin who? Dashmeinin le'la Rabbi Akiva. You have Rabbi Akiva who has that position, Damar, Lila's man tefillin who? Shabbat loves man tefillin who? That's not a good proof. That's not a good assumption. That's because Lila is man tefillin, that Shabbat is also man tefillin. The two are not necessarily correlated. We can bifurcate the din and say that Lila is man tefillin like Rabbi Akiva, but Shabbat and Yom Tov are not man tefillin. Elahai Tanahu. Up to our third attempt at trying to find a Tana that thinks that Shabbat is man tefillin. You can see the difficulty the Gemara has in finding a position that supports this idea that Shabbat is man tefillin. The Tanya. So this is a very interesting Gemara. We have a brayta. Michal bat Hushi haita manechet tefillin. Michal, the daughter of the Kushi, put on tefillin. Bat Kushi, as Rashi says over here, refers to Shaul. Because it says in Tehillim, al divrei Kush ben Yamini. Kush ben Yamini, the son from the tribe of Binyamin, dainu Shaul. In Moed Katan, the Gemara Darshan's that is referring to Shaul. So Shaul has this name of Hushi that is associated with him. The Gemara in Moed Katan discusses why that is the case. But here it's referring to Michal bat Shaul, used to put on tefillin. V'lo Micha ba Chachamim. And the Chachamim did not object to her putting on tefillin. Ishto shel Yonah, Yonah being the Navi Yonah, Yonah ben Amitai. Haita ula la regel. She used to go up to the regel. V'lo Michu ba Chachamim. And the Chachamim did not object. Michal bat Shaul put on tefillin, and the Chachamim did not object to that. And the Yishto of Yonah, the Navi, went up to the Regel, and they did not object to that. That's a Girsa in our Gemara. Tosafot brings a Girsa from the Psikta Rabati, and over there it says, Amro Yishto shel Yonah Hoshava. That when they, the wife of Yonah, they used to send her back home. Michal bat Kushi, Michu ba Chachamim. That the Chachamim rejected. So we have, in the other Midrashim that quote this, they actually have the exact opposite Girsa, that the Chachamim did object to them doing this. But we're going to follow our Gemara now, which is, V'lo michu ba Chachamim. The Chachamim did not object to them doing this. Why is that relevant? Because, V'lo michu ba Chachamim, the fact that the Chachamim did not object, Alma kasavre, that it's a mitzvah that seish lo zman gramahi, it's a mitzvah that is not no longer time-bound. A mitzvah is time-bound because time has an impact on the mitzvah. You can formulate it in one of two ways. In the Gemara in Kiddushin, Rashi formulates it this way, which is, mitzvah, shazman gorim lo lavo. It's a mitzvah which time causes it to come. The Rambam, on the other hand, writes it, it's a mitzvah ba mizman lezman. Mitzvah that comes from time to time. There are nafkaminot between those formulations, but in either case here, when you're dealing with tefillin, if tefillin do not have the exclusion for night and for Shabbat v'yom tov, they're no longer a time-bound mitzvah. If you don't wear tefillin at night, or, more importantly, you don't wear tefillin on Shabbat and Yom Tov, then they are a time-bound mitzvah. There are times when you do not wear tefillin. There are times when you do wear tefillin. If that's the case, then the women would be turot from tefillin. So Gemara's assumption here is that the fact that the Chachamim did not object to Michal bat Shaul wearing tefillin is an indication that the mitzvah is a mitzvah she'ein hazman grama. The mitzvah that's not dictated by time. Well, the only way it cannot be dictated by time is if this Tana believes, number one, that Shabbat is man tefillin, and number two, that Lila is man tefillin. That's what the Gemara is trying to conclude here. Gemara says, V'dilma, Savarlo, ki Rabbi Yossi. Maybe they hold like Rabbi Yossi, Damar Nashim Semchot Rishut, that women can do smichan or karbanot voluntarily. So Rabbi Yossi is addressing a limud from the Pasuk, which is, Daber el bnei Yisrael, v'amartelem, adam ki yarkiv mikem, when a person brings a korban, v'samach yado, then he places his hands on it, he does smicha on the korban. The pasuk begins, Daber el bnei Yisrael. The Gemara dashes from that, bnei Yisrael somchim, v'lo benot Yisrael somchot. That the mitzvah of smicha only applies to men, not to women. Yet, Rabbi Yossi is of the belief that even though women are not obligated in smicha, they can opt into the mitzvah. They're allowed to do it even though they're not obligated in it. And so the Gemara is saying, how do you know that that's not the case over here? Maybe the case over here is that they're not chayavot. They're not obligated in the mitzvah. So that would mean that it is a mitzvah to say sheha zman grama. It is a time-bound mitzvah, but they're opting in. Well, if it's a time-bound mitzvah, you have no proof that Shabbat is zman tefillin anymore. And the Gemara says, ilo teima hochi, you must have to say that this is the explanation here, because ishto shel Yonah, haytu ala la regel. That she went up to the regel, v'lo michuba, and nobody objected. Mi ika l'man damar regel la mitzvah da seisha zman gramahu. There's nobody who says that aliyah the regel is not a time-bound mitzvah. Aliyah the regel is only on the regel, only on Yom Tov. There's nobody who says that it applies outside of Yom Tov. If that's the case, then it obviously is a mitzvah da seisha zman gramah, And the only reason that the wife of Yonah is going up to the regal is because she's opting in. That it's optional. So to here by tefillin, it's reshut. And now the Gemara moves on to the next situation. But the Gemara here just went through what seemingly is extremely controversial and very interesting Gemara about a contemporary issue in terms of women wearing tefillin. Now, to be honest with you, there isn't so much literature about this, and mostly because it just wasn't relevant. We have this in terms of also the women giving hora'ah. So women giving hora'ah, even though the Gemara has, or it's unclear from the Gemara in certain places as to what the halacha is, the Rishonim almost gloss over the whole issue, is because it wasn't relevant in their time that women would give psak halacha, give hora'ah. It's only in the modern era where these issues come up, all of a sudden people want to find sources and find the writings. But because it's so irrelevant to the Rishonim, they only almost mention it in passing, and they don't mention it in detail. They don't get so involved in the issue, because even if it was, let's say, for instance, okay, the women of that time were not doing these things because it just wasn't within their purview or wasn't within their world. Nevertheless, the Tosfot over here does address the issue. He first of all brings the Rabbeinu Tam, which is an important Rabbeinu Tam, about the ability of women to opt in to mitzvot. When it comes to a mitzvah aseh as man grama, the Rabbeinu Tam here discusses the fact that women are able to opt in, and that's clear here from Rabbi Yossi, who we paskin like. And that the Sfardim also agree with. The Ashkenazim and Sfardim are in agreement that a woman can opt in to a mitzvah aseh as man grama. What they disagree about is whether they can make a bracha over such an item. The Rabbeinu Tam here argues that you can make a bracha and a mitzvah aseh as man grama that women opt into. So there, Rabbeinu Tam, it discusses and talks about the fact that women can opt in to mitzvot, and when they do opt into a mitzvah, they can make a bracha when they do such. And as such, Ashkenazi women make a bracha for shofar. They make a bracha on sukkah, lulav, all of these mitzvot, which are mitzvot aseh as man grama that they're opted into. Whereas Sephardi women, they can perform the mitzvah, they do not make a bracha, because Rabbeinu Tam is the mechadish of this shita, that you can make a bracha on mitzvot that you opt into, that are optional, you can make a bracha on them. And at this point, the Gemara believes the fact that a woman would wear tefillin is an indication of the fact that she must be chayevet in the mitzvah of tefillin. We wouldn't assume that she was simply opting into the mitzvah of tefillin, because there would be a mitigating issue. As Rashi says over here, that it looks like you're mosif ala mitzvah. This is like you're being bal tosif if you wear tefillin at night. Or if women put on tefillin, it's an issue of bal tosif. What Rashi is suggesting is that if it wasn't a mitzvah for women to put on tefillin, then it would be bal tosif for them to put it on. Tosafot rejects it and says, that's not the reason here. The reason has nothing to do with the fact that it looks like bal tosif if they opt in. But rather, the problem is that tefillin, tzrichim guf naki. Tefillin require a clean body. That's both for men and women. Nashim ein zvizot lizaher. And for women, that's not so simple. Not so simple, not because there's anything wrong with women, but because women have this involuntary aspect to the guf naki, which is their menstrual cycle, which they're not in control of, and that could come upon them at any time. And because of that, they can't wear tefillin when they don't have a guf naki. Whereas for a man, a guf naki is something that they're in control of, so we assume that they can maintain that control to wear tefillin. On the other hand, women don't, because of that involuntary nature of the menstrual cycle. They don't have that, so they don't wear it. So for that reason, the Gemara believes if Michal Bat Shaul put on tefillin, it can only be because she was chayevet. Now the truth is that you could deal with that issue, which is that you can wear tefillin or you could put them on in a time period where you don't have that problem, where the involuntary aspect of it is not problematic. It's not perfect, but assuming that that is the case and the cycle of the woman is pretty steady, then they could put it on during times that their gufin are nikiin. Tosafot later on raises an issue which is not related. We're going to see in a second in the Gemara about the difference between what's called mabush ish and mabush isha. Clothing that belongs to men and clothing that belongs to women. Over here, he doesn't directly address it. He mentions that in passing, that maybe tefillin are mabush ish, that they're a man's clothing, not a woman's clothing. He does not invoke that principle in terms of halachic necessity. He deals with Shabbat, about carrying on Shabbat. But what is raised, or what he's mentioning here, actually is raised by the Yonatan ben Uziel and his translation in the Torah, the Aramaic translation of the Torah, which is not necessarily a direct translation, it's a translation with commentary. And in that translation, he says, when it comes to the mitzvah of lo yibash gever simlat isha, a man may not wear women's clothing, and women may not wear men's clothing. Over there he says, what does it mean that a woman should not wear men's clothing? He says, talit tefillin. That talit tefillin are considered to be a man's clothing, and therefore there's an isur for a woman to wear it, because those are men's clothing, or they belong, they're within the men's arena of clothing. For instance, there the Gemara discusses things like weapons, and so on and so forth, whether a woman picking up a weapon is also in that category. But he clearly defines them as men's clothing, and therefore there's an isur, at least according to him, d'oraita, min haTorah, for a woman to wear it, not because of tefillin inherently or talit inherently, but because of this issue that is begadish. Since it's begadish, they can't put it on. Now that does have some circular logic to it. The reason it's begadish is because only men put them on, and that's why it is begadish. Had women put them on, then it wouldn't have just been begadish. So I agree there is some sort of circular logic, but in the context of what we know today, that's the way it was, so therefore it is begadish, and it does present an additional problem for women putting on talit and tefillin. So the two reasons or that are brought down in terms of women not wearing tzitzit and tefillin are guf neki and this issue of begadish. Ikar halacha, and the Ramah quotes this, is that in reality there is no real halachic objection that we can raise in terms of women not wearing tefillin. It's a mitzvah that says zman grama, and like other mitzvot, they could opt into them if they abide by all the issues that they need to get by. But he says, nevertheless, and the Ramah says this halacha similar to what we saw in our Gemara over here, based on the Psikta Rabati, is that one should object, that we should not allow the women to put on tefillin and talit. He feels like that is not appropriate or not proper for the women to put on talit and tefillin. The Ramah himself does not address why, but he gives it, takes it as a given that it's not the proper conduct for a woman and that one should object to a woman putting on a talit or tefillin. So the Ramah's conclusion is, since they are only optional in tefillin, it's a mitzvah that says, as Ram Ramah, yes, they can opt in, but since it's only optional, and we have a mitigating halakhic issue, which is the problem of gufnaki, and possibly the problem of begid ish, therefore we tell women, don't put on tefillin. We object, mochin biyadam, we stop them from doing it because there are negative ramifications of doing that. And even if there are, quote-unquote, yechidei skula, they can't do this, or can't do the mitzvah of tefillin properly, to institutionalize such a mitzvah for women would be very problematic, because not all women will be well-versed enough to know the halacha with regards to tefillin, and in addition to that, they're very likely to run into problems because of the involuntary nature of the issues of gufnaki. And despite the fact that there is a well-known Mesorah that Benot Rashi wore tefillin, we have no primary source that indicates that that's true. It's written nowhere, not in the Machzor Vitri, not in the Sefer Pardes, areas where you would expect to find these types of mentions, and therefore it remains in the realm of apocryphal rather than Mesorah or halacha lemaaseh. Gemara now still doesn't have their author to a position that Shemat is Zman Tfilin. Ella Hai Tanahi. It must be authored by these Tanaim, the Tanya. Motzei Tfilin, person who finds Tfilin out in the field. Machnisam Zug Zug. Brings them in one at a time, pair by pair. Echad Aish v'Echad Aisha. Man or woman. Echad Chadashot v'Echad Yishanot. New ones or used ones. Divrei Rabbi Meir. That's position of Rabbi Meir. Yehuda Oser v'Chadashot. Yehuda says that newer tefillin, you can't bring in. Matir b'yishanot, but the older ones you can bring in. Mar says, ad kan lo pligi ele b'chadashot v'yishanot. The only machlok between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda is whether you bring in new tefillin. Do we assume that the new tefillin may be amulets, or they really are tefillin and you bring them in? But that's where they argue. Aval b'yisha lo pligi. Everybody agrees that a woman could bring in the tefillin. Shmeina mitzvah daseh shalo azman gramahu. That must be that this is a mitzvah daseh that is not time-bound. And that's why women can bring them in. Why can the women bring in the tefillin, zug zug, wear them in pair by pair? It's because it's a mitzvah that say, she'en azman grama. It's not a time-bound mitzvah, and therefore chayavot. And they are chayavot. Gemara says, maybe they hold like Rabbi Yossi, that you can opt in. They're not saying it's obligatory for the woman, it's just that she can opt in. We wouldn't think that. Delo, Rabbi Meir, sever like Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yehuda, sever like Rabbi Yossi. Because Rabbi Meir does not hold like Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold like Rabbi Yossi. The Tanan. How do we know that? Because we have a Mishnah in Rosh Hashanah that says, we don't stop the children from blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Ha, nashim akvin. But the women, we do stop them from blowing the shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So again, for Rashi, that's because it looks like Baal Tosif. They're not obligated in shofar. If they're blowing the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, it looks like they're adding on a mitzvah. For Tosafot, there has to be something else there. There's another, what we call mitigating factor, or halachic issue. And Tosafot says, the halachic issue is that shofar, there is an Isur Darabanan of musical instruments on Shabbat and Yom Tov. And we waive that on Rosh Hashanah because the mitzvah Yom is shofar. But you only waive that for someone who has the mitzvah. Someone who doesn't have the mitzvah, we're not going to waive it. So over here, what do you say from that Mishnah is that Nashim Akvin, we stop the women from blowing shofar, means that they're not shayechet, they're not connected to the mitzvah of shofar at all. The Stam Matnit and Rabbi Meir, and the Stam Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir, and we see from that that Rabbi Meir believes that Nashim are not chayavot in shofar. Not only are they not chayavot, they don't opt in. Had they been able to opt in, like Rabbi Yossi says, then they still would be relevant to shofar and should be able to blow it on Rosh Hashanah. The fact that they can't blow it at all seems to indicate they have no relevance to shofar and Rosh Hashanah, and that's against the position of Rabbi Yossi. So that's how we know Rabbi Meir does not subscribe to Rabbi Yossi's position. Below Rabbi Yehuda, Savalak Rabbi Yossi, how do we know that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't subscribe to that position of Rabbi Yossi? The Tanya, the Barrel B'nei Yisrael V'Samach. This is the source of the fact that B'nei Yisrael Sumchim V'nei B'nei Yisrael Sumchot. That only men do Smichan HaKorban, not women. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon omrin, Nashim Sumchot Rishut. Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Shimon disagree and say, yes, it's true. I mean, Ikar Din, they don't have to do it, but they have the ability to opt in and do it. The Gemara says, V'stam Sifra, we're quoting this from a Sifra, which is Torat Kohanim, which is the Loch Midrash on Vayikra. And who is the author of that Sifra? It's Rabbi Yehuda. And the position that's brought without any author or assignment of authorship is the first position there, which is V'nei Sol Sumchim, V'nei B'not Yisol Sumchot. And so that must be authored by Rabbi Yehuda, and he disagrees with Rabbi Yossi. So again, you see that Rabbi Yehuda does not believe that women can opt in when it's a mitzvah that says she'azman grama. It's clear here that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda do not agree with Rabbi Yossi. And not agreeing with Rabbi Yossi, that means the only reason they would let women bring in tefillin on Shabbat is because they think they're chayavot in tefillin. They can only be in chayavot in tefillin if it's a mitzvah that says she'azman grama. And that means that Shabbat is zman tefillin. And therefore, they'll be the authors of this position. Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda will be the authors of this position that Shabbat is Zman Tefillin. And that's the way the Gemara concludes or leaves it. Despite that fact that we have Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir arguing, we know, we've seen already, that the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, halacha like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, halacha like Rabbi Yehuda. So that means Rabbi Yossi trumps everyone, and the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi. And that's part of Rabbeinu Tam's position here, that the law is like Rabbi Yossi, that women can opt in to mitzvah that says Man Grama, and that's part of why he says that they do make brachot on that mitzvah. Right now, the Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Lazar, a motzei tchelet b'shuk, someone who finds tchelet in the shuk, just lying out on the ground. Lishonot, he finds tufts of tchelet psulot. You cannot use them for tzitzit, because we assume that they are psul, because we don't know if they really are tchelet. Chutin, if you find strings, they are ksherim. Then we say that you can use them for your tzitzit. Maishna lishonot, damar. Why is by lishonot do we say that you can't use them? Damar, day to the glima tzavinu. He made the tchelet to put it into his coat or his cloak, not to make them into tzitzit. Chutin nami. Why don't we say the same thing with strings? Nema day to the glima tzavinu. That he spun the strings in order to use them to weave his cloak. How do you know they're going to be for tzitzit? Where it says, bishizurim. They're not only spun, but they're twisted. Where it says, Shizurim Nami Neima. Let's say these twisted strings are the Daita the Sifta the Glima, Ayafinhu. That they did it for the purpose of hanging them from the edges of the Beged. In their day, when they used to put on the edges of the Beged, they did not have like us, where we have a folded and sealed up hem. They used to have loose strings that came out of the side there. Those are these longer strings that hung in from the side. So how do you know that when you have these strings that are both spun and twisted, that they're going to be used for tzitzit. They might have been used for making a beged. The big issue here is that tzitzit have to be done lishma. They have to be done l'shem tzitzit. They have to be made l'shem tzitzit. And they also here, with tzchel, they have to be dyed l'shem tzitzit. So we're uncertain as to this stuff that we find on the ground, was it done l'shem tzitzit or not? The Gemara says, well, it depends how much work was put into it. If there was very little put into it, we assume that it could have been equally for a glima, for a jacket or a cloak. But then the Gemara keeps saying, well, you can say with each of these items, no matter how much work was put into it, this could have been prepared for a cloak and not for tzitzit. Gemara says, v'mufsakim, they're cut. Not only are they spun and twisted, they're also cut. Now when you cut them down to size, then those strings are most likely for tzitzit, because the person would only cut them to that size to use as tzitzit, not for the edge of the beged. If they were going to be used for the edge of the beged, you'd want a longer string, and you wouldn't cut them. You're not going to cut them and then tie them back together in order to use them. If you're cutting them, they're clearly for tzitzit. Where it says, the kulehai vade lo tarche inche. People wouldn't put that much effort into the strings without the purpose of tzitzit. Nobody's going to, first of all, dye them, then spin them, then twist them, and then cut them, and not use them for tzitzit. It doesn't seem to make any sense to put all that effort in to make them for the right size of tzitzit, and then go and try to tie them back together again and use them for a baguette. That doesn't make sense. But Amar Rav, v'chi adam toreach lasod kmiyah, kamin tfilin. So Rav now takes that din and applies it to our Gemara here. Does anybody put in an effort to make tfilin in order to call it an amulet? Our Gemara here says, or that we had a machlok between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda over here, about whether when you have new tfilin, do we consider them to be tfilin? Or do we say maybe they're an amulet? And so Rav poses the question and says, who would put all that effort in to make tfilin, something that looks like tfilin, for an amulet? Same question, why can't we say the same thing here by tfilin? Ditznan. When is that true? B'yishanot, an older tefillin. Aval b'chadashot patur, newer tefillin, you don't bring them in because we're afraid they might be an amulet. Why are we afraid that they're going to be an amulet if there's so much effort expended to make the tefillin? We should assume that they are tefillin. If someone put that effort in, that they made them tefillin, like by the tzitzit. Zera says to his son, Abba, pok tani lehu, go and tell the Rabbonon this braita. Amutzei tchelit pashuk, l'shanot psulim, chutim, musakim, ksherim. That there is a difference. We do see such a distinction, which is that if you have tchelet that you find in the shuk, if you find them as tufts, then they're pasul for tzitzit. If you find them as strings that are cut, ksherim, lefi she'en adam toreach. So that fact that a person doesn't make that effort. So we do see such a distinction between making an effort, not making an effort. And Rava's question is a good question because we do have such a distinction being made within the din of tzitzit. So why don't we make it such a distinction within the din of tefillin as well? Amarovo mishum de tani lo ava brei de Rabbi Zera, just because we have a bright that brought by ava brei de Rabbi Zera, kife talila, we should hang up the earrings, we should then adorn it with the jewelry. Why is that then conclusive? Why are you bringing that bright that by tzitzit and saying that's the conclusive din here? That when there's effort made, people don't do it unless it's for the real thing. When there's no effort made, then we have questions. How do you know that's really the lacha? But it's not. Our Mishnah that we just quoted before, b'med, v'ray mamarim b'yishanot. That's only by old ones. Aval b'chadashot patur. When it comes to new ones, you're patur. So here you see that our Gemara draws such a distinction between yishanot and chadashot, despite the fact that the chadashot are tefillin. And even though they're tefillin, we see that people might be toreach, make them into amulet. And we do worry about that. Elo amarava, tarach v'lo tarach tanayehi. That this idea of whether people may expend effort for things that are not tzitzit, people may expend the effort for things that are not tefillin, that happens to be a machloket tanaim. Tanya, motzei tefillin, person who finds tefillin, machnisan zug zug, bring them in pair by pair, echad ish ve'echad isha, man and woman, echad chadashot ve'echad yishanot, whether they're new or old, divrei Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir seems to say that it doesn't matter. If you put in effort, we assume that they are tefillin no matter whether they are new or old. That's why he lets you bring in both of them. Because nobody would make the effort to make tefillin in order to make them an amulet. So Rav Meir says, you find tefillin, they're tefillin. The other hand, Rav Yehuda, Oser b'chadashot matir b'shanot. He says, the new ones are problematic, the old ones are okay, the used ones are okay. Because the used ones we know are tefillin. And as Tosafot points out over here, the reason we know that the older ones are tefillin is because of the kasher. And even though the Gemara further on will say maybe there was no kasher, we still see the markings of making a kasher. So that in combination, knowing that it's tefillin, plus they made the knots that are associated with tefillin, they're for sure, they have kedushat tefillin. But the newer ones, which don't have a kasher, don't have the marking of a kasher, the newer ones could be amulets. So according to Rabbi Yehuda. So what do you see? Alma, marsavar, tarachinish. One of them says people will make the effort to do something even though it's an amulet. That's Rabbi Yehuda's position, and that's why he says you can't bring in the new ones. Marsavar, lo tarachinish. Whereas Rabbi Meir says people will not expend an effort to make something tefillin if unless it's going to be tefillin, and therefore you can bring them in even when they are new. We're not going to assume that they are amulets. And therefore Rava says that it happens to be a machloket tanaim. It's not definitive. That's which we quote from Rabbi Lazar, or that which Ava Brei Rabbi Zera brought from the Braita, while it's true that there is a position like that, that people are not toreach when it comes to doing something that's not the mitzvah. Nevertheless, we have a Tana who disagrees, and that's Rabbi Yehuda in our Gemara over here, Rabbi Yehuda says that by tefillin, people make them into amulets. So you're right, there is one position like that, but we do have an opposing position. It's not a definitive halacha that just because someone expended effort that we assume that it's done for the mitzvah, maybe it's a case where it's not done for the mitzvah, and that's why Rabbi Yehuda has this position that tefillin could be amulets, And he probably would disagree by tchelet as well, that the tchelet could be made not for tzitzit, despite the fact that all that effort has been expended in that case. Okay, we'll stop over here.